Intervju Radija Študent.
Prav lepo pozdravljeni v Ereš intervjuju, kjer bomo čez nekaj trenutkov poslušali pogovor z ameriškim pianistom indijskega porekla Vijay Iyerjem. Vijay bo nocoj nastopil skupaj še s kitaristom Prasano in tolkavcem Nitin Mito v klubu Cankarjevega doma. Poslušajmo, kaj ima povedati o tem novem projektu, najprej pa uvodni komad s plošče Tirta.
So, Vijay, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. How was your travel?
Oh, it was long and tumultuous.
Okay. So, what's new with your project, sir? Tirsa? How is it pronounced?
Tirta.
Tirsa.
What about it?
Yeah.
Well, it's a group that formed about 4 years ago. It's a collaboration with two musicians who were born and raised in India, currently live in the U.S. As opposed to me, I was born and raised in the U.S. My parents are from India. So we all have sort of different perspectives on South Asian heritage and culture and stuff. The guitarist is named Prasanna. He grew up in Chennai. He grew up listening to rock music from the West, you know, from Deep Purple to Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, and this kind of stuff. So that's what he was playing as a child on guitar. And then he got sort of stumbled into Carnatic music, South Indian classical music, and realized that he could maybe try to do that on guitar. And then he became basically the first person to do that. Pioneers of the guitar, to play Carnatic music with all the inflections and melismatic nuances on a normal electric guitar that had never been done before. So then he had a Carnatic classical career. Played a lot of he toured a lot in his youth, his teens and twenties. Playing classical Indian music from the south, and also got involved in the film industry in India. So, and then when he was in his mid-late 20s, he decided to study Western music in the U.S., so he went to Berklee School of Music for composition, got a master's there. And so he's been in Boston since then. So that's how I met him. You know, he's been doing a lot of projects collaborating with people, with American jazz musicians and so on. And so he had a pretty interesting and open perspective on music. And is just a virtuoso on the guitar. So, and then Nitin Mitta, the tabla player, he grew up in Hyderabad, which is actually in South India, but he plays a North Indian percussion instrument, tabla. His uncle was in the film industry, so in addition to playing classical music, Hindustani classical music, he also was involved in film music as well. And then he moved to the U.S. about 9 years ago, and I met him in New York because we had mutual colleagues. So he's become, you know, sort of the top accompanist for Hindustani artists when they come, like sitar players and sarood players and so on. We'll call him usually. But he also, because of being in New York, has collaborated with a lot of Western musicians in a lot of different areas of music. So he's also very open between his classical knowledge, his film music knowledge, and his experiences working with him. So we just sort of started to try this thing about 4 years ago. We had a nice invitation to play in Chicago. And, I had an invitation, and then I decided to pull this group together for it.
It was an anniversary of the independence, or how was it?
Yes, well, that was what it was celebrating. It was a promotional event put on by the Indian Ministry of Tourism, but that was being used as an occasion to celebrate India and the diaspora too. So we
did that.
Well, when we first sat down to rehearse for that concert, it just felt very simple. It felt very good. It felt very natural, and it felt alive. You know, and it wasn't even. I think rather than treating it as I'm playing jazz and so-and-so is playing Indian music or something, it's sort of like we all met in the middle because we all are influenced by a lot of things, you know. And I've been influenced by Indian music for a long time now. Something like 17, 18 years I've been really dealing with the structures of Indian music, rhythmic ideas and so on. Dealing with ragas and stuff, so it actually works pretty easily because we're all sort of, you know, from different perspectives, we're all sort of meeting and, you know, just creating together. So I guess because of that, I don't really think of it as a fusion project. That's sort of the framework that people will tend to see it because that's, you know, that's their perspective on it, like jazz musicians meet Indian musicians and so on. But to me, it's much closer. It's more like, I mean, when I hang out with these guys, it's like hanging out with my cousins or something. You know? So that whole notion of difference kind of doesn't exist. You know, that notion of the encounter with the other or something. It's not really at all present. So we're just making stuff.
What about the meaning of the word Tirtha?
Tirtha, the reason that, well, that became the name of the band because it's the name of one of my compositions that the band plays. And that word means, it refers literally, it's an old Sanskrit word. It literally refers to the shallow part of a stream or a body of water where you can cross it by foot. But more symbolically, it has to do with a place of pilgrimage and a holy place, you know, like often Tirtha will be a place where a temple is built or something. And I guess the connotation is that it's a place where you cross over to another realm, you know. So there's just a certain sense of, I guess this project has involved a number of different crossings in the sense that it's a portrait of South Asian diaspora and it's, you know, having migrated and so on. So there are those, but then there's also the sense that we can build something that takes us to another place.
And also the music, your compositions, and compositions from Prasanna on the album are lined up interchangeably on the album. Like, one is yours and one is from Prasanna. Is that also kind of a...
Well, that was just sort of, to me, how the album worked best. It's not even necessarily because of who wrote the music, but what the ultimate energy is like. You know, I guess that's, you know, in every case with my albums, we record all the music and then I listen to it and think more about shaping the overall energy and the overall arc of the album. So I don't think about who wrote what or whether I take a killing solo on one versus another.
Yeah.
I think more about what the music feels like for a listener who doesn't care about any of that. You know. So that just sort of ends up being almost a chance thing. But maybe it's also that he and I have sort of contrasting dispositions, and so maybe an aspect of that comes out. Well, here they are, talking about him right now.
It's Dubsters.
A cameo. So I think we do have different sensibilities. He doesn't write the way I write, so he doesn't think necessarily the way I think, and that's fine. That's because we're two individuals, you know. So I suppose maybe it works out to, as we kind of come out of one thing, to step into something that is just a different feeling.
And it's funny because when I listened to it, it appeared to me that, like, from listening it really closely, I couldn't tell if it was your composition or Prasanna's composition.
Mm-hmm.
You managed to find, like, a really common, I don't know, language or common picture.
Good. Well, like I said, we're working with a lot of similar elements from different sides, you know, so neither one of us is so unfamiliar to the other in terms of... And then also we spent a lot of time beyond what's written on the page just finding a group sound. Or in a way, that group sound found us. It was, like I said, it was actually... That was what I noticed first when we started playing together. It was like, oh, we already sound like a band or something. You know? So that's, I guess that's sort of what you're hearing, that continuity, which is more of the ensemble's identity.
Mm-hmm. There is a really different tune on the album called Polytheism, which is kind of kicking out of the continuity, I think.
Yeah.
With the tonality.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's literally, you know, it's Prasanna's kind of experiment with atonality, in the sense he's doing with 12-tone logic and stuff, you know. He's influenced by those guys, the second Viennese school, so. I mean, he studied composition in the West in a sort of classical sense, so he's dealt with some of those ideas. And then he wanted to see if he could bring that Indian melodic sensibility to this extremely atonal context, so it does stand out a bit because of all those bizarre slides and large intervals.
That you learned piano like by yourself? You're self-taught?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, well, I learned from a lot of different opportunities I had. I first learned by ear, just picking out things by myself. Then in high school I was in a rock band starting in about 9th or 10th grade. And then also in high school I was allowed to join the jazz ensemble at school. And that was in maybe 11th grade. So 11th and 12th grade, I was in the school jazz band playing every day with people. So that's, you know, I didn't have private instruction, But I had kind of group instruction, and that gave me a lot of opportunity to figure things out. And then when I was in college, I started leading my own groups and writing music and playing more, playing gigs not just in a scholastic context, but actually out in the city and stuff. And that just kept growing. When I moved to California in 92, a lot of things opened up for me pretty rapidly. So I basically learned on the job, I guess you could say.
Yeah, because here the system is usually, when kids go to school, they first learn sheet music, and mm-hmm. then if they learn anything by ear, I mean, that's almost non-existent.
Yeah. Well, I studied violin, and I learned in the classical way on that, but I started when I was three on this thing called the Suzuki method, which teaches by ear first, mm-hmm. and then you learn to read a couple of years later. So that's sort of what I had been doing. And so that's why I was able to pick out things on the piano, was because my ear was trained. Mm. But it's true, I mean, I'm not a very typical, at least as of today, I'm not so typical a jazz musician in the sense that I didn't go through the conservatories. But, you know, 50 years ago, nobody went to a conservatory to play jazz.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I don't know, Miles went to Juilliard and stuff like that. There were instances of guys actually studying in a more formalized context, but most of the time, they learned the way I learned. You know, they learned by ear, they learned by playing in church, they learned by hanging out with their buddies and listening to records and just trying stuff. You know? And that's kind of how the music was created. So I guess, you know, people see me as the oddball, but actually I feel like I'm more traditional in that sense of like the spontaneous creativity that's at the heart of this music. That's how, I mean, that's just much more close to me as a person. I didn't learn, you know, so I don't know, it just, to me, the music sounds different today because of that, because basically what you're hearing is people who learned in a scholastic setting where they weren't really even necessarily encouraged to think for themselves. And it values virtuosity and kind of showmanship over creativity and really new ideas. So that's sort of what you hear.
So what do the... You work in New York, right? Most of the time.
I live in New York. I work all over the world.
Okay. Good answer. But what do the, for example, the New York audiences respond to most then?
Well, they respond to energy just like any audience does. You know? I mean, it's you can't really generalize about what in music people respond to, because it's more about can you create an experience for an audience that will stay with them and that will kind of be transformative in a way. You know, I mean, people respond to all kinds of things. They respond to sort of just the sheer athletics of playing, like, you know, the virtuosity of achievement of some things with precision and velocity and so on. And, you know, but does that really grab them emotionally? That's, you know, it's not really, that's a different question. And in a way, the music that stays with people is not necessarily the music that they respond to the most immediately, you know. So I guess I just don't tend to generalize. All I do is try to make music that I like and that I want to share with people. And I also like collaborating with people because that takes me outside of myself. So that's basically all I can say about it. About, you know, if you want me to talk shit about other musicians. And that's, you know, we'd have to censor it.
Maybe we will. yeah, because here you have like the scene is really mainstream, like people who went to conservatories and they play and in the same manner as they played like years and years ago. And people who try to make really something new and they get absolutely no audience or maybe 20 people per concert. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling like that you're like somewhere in between these two.
Well, we'll see if more than 20 people come to our concert. That will be the true measure of success. No, well, I guess it's like I said, I mean, I said I learned on the job. What I really meant is that I learned by apprenticing with elder musicians. You know, so when I was living in Oakland, California, I got to play, I was a house pianist at this jam session with a lot of older guys. So I used to play with guys who were 30 and 40 years older than me. And then I toured with Steve Coleman, who's 15 years older than me. Then I worked with George Lewis and Roscoe Mitchell and Modato Leo Smith, Butch Morris, and Emery Baraka. These guys are all decades older than I am. Not only that, they're all pioneers who think for themselves. So I'm just trying to do one fraction of anything that any of them did. That's all I'm doing. And I guess because I bypassed that scholastic mentality and that whole apparatus, I didn't get infected by that weird, very recent phenomenon of doing what everybody else did because people seem to like it or something. You know, it's not that I don't want people to like it, but I want to lead people somewhere they haven't been, and I want to go somewhere myself that I haven't been. You know, so I'm more interested in. And new experiences. I guess that's me. But also, I don't see that as disconnected from the tradition or anything. That to me is the tradition. Tradition is creativity. That's what it is. So that's why, I mean, I'm influenced above all by Monk and Duke Ellington and Coltrane. You know, the usual suspects. It's more that I guess, you know, one thing I learned from Steve Coleman is that you can deal with tradition, so-called tradition, in a creative way. You don't have to deal with it in some formulaic way and get cornered into playing a certain way. You know, Steve Coleman is a scholar of Charlie Parker, and he can, you know, he basically has written books. I mean, the equivalent of books on the subject just in the course of emails about it, you know? And he, actually recently, he wrote this sort of an essay online about Charlie Parker that, to me, is the most important thing ever written about Charlie Parker. It's a really in-depth analysis of 12 different recordings. Well, you know, like, quite analytical and quite technical, but also very, very empowering in the way he talks about it. You know, so it's not like this is the way to do things. It's more like this is, you know, it just there's a creativity even in the way he analyzes things. And then then when you see that in action, that mentality, you see that the tradition is not closed, you know, the past is not over. I guess that's what I mean. You can revisit the past and bring something new, or get something new out of it every time. That's what's most important to me. So, you know, and another thing I think about is, you know, Stockhausen is a bit, he's sort of extreme, obviously, in the other direction in terms of his relationship to tradition for various personal and political reasons, aesthetic reasons and stuff. But I saw this quote, an interview, actually Bjork interviewed Stockhausen, which is really funny because she's sort of so childlike and he's so domineering. It's very strange. It's a strange kind of. But one thing he says about, he said, you know, he says, in an ideal world, we would listen to new music every day, or 364 days a year, and traditional music one day a year. the way things are balanced now, he said the analogy he uses is like it's like looking at old pictures of your childhood every day. Instead of just fixating on the past, you know, you never move forward because you're so mired in your own past, you know. So treating it like, you know, seeing it like that is kind of like, let's keep it in perspective here and balance, you know. It doesn't go away just because you stop looking at it, you know, it's still there. The book of photos is still in your closet or on your hard drive or whatever. It's not going to disappear because you stop looking at it. And it's still a part of you, you know. And in a way, also, there are the pictures of those moments, and then there's actually the life that was lived that gave rise to those moments, you know. So then you think, well, that's already a part of me. My past is inside me, you know. So that's the way I sort of think about it. I mean, because I've had this question about tradition and styles and things, especially dealing with these guys, you know, Prasanna and Nitin. That you know, like how the people will ask, how do you mix these traditions? And it's like I said, it's not, you know, the tradition is not outside of people, it's in people. So when people come together, the tradition is in them, and it sounds itself, you know, it's not being rejected because. It can't ever. You're never outside of it. That's the thing. You're never outside of culture, you know. So that's the main point for me, is that we should all be free to express ourselves, because in the larger sense, history is always speaking through us. So that's kind of what I have to say. That's probably enough. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, 24 minutes.
Okay.
Tole je bil intervju z Vijay Iyerjem, ki bo svojim, zapisano je poslednjim, pa vendar upamo, da ne še čisto poslednjim projektom, ki vključuje poleg njega še dva ameriška glasbenika indijskega porekla, kitarista Prasano in tolkalca Nitin Mito, nastopil nocoj v klubu Cankarjevega doma. Ukolikor vas je avtorica Maja Matič z intervjujem navdušila, se z njo vidite tam ob 9:30 zvečer.
Intervju Radija Študent.